O writer of fortunes, graciously write on my heart love for the master. This is the Bhajan Likan of Aliya Tuhoke on page 29. In my hands write the service of the Guru, write the sacrifice of my body and mind for the Guru. On my tongue write the name of the Guru, for my ears write the voice of the sound current. On my forehead write the light of the Guru, for my eyes write the darshan of my Guru. Don't write one thing, separation from the Guru. It doesn't matter if separation from the whole world is written. O writer of fortunes, graciously write on my heart love for the Master. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 29.
Likan of Aliya Tuhoke De Alalika De Mere Hirde Viche Gurata Pyara Lika De Lika Navalia Tu Oke De Ala Lika De
Mere De Viche Gurada Pyara Lika De
Hata vichalika de seva guru jiti.
Hata vichalika de seva guru jiti.
Mera tana mana guru ute. Varalika de
mere hirde viche gurada pyaralika de
Telika de nama guru jita
jiva telika de nama guru jita
mere kana vicha dona di avazalika de
mere hirde viche gurada pyara lika de lika navalia tu oke deala lika de
Te lika de jota guru jiti
mata te lika de jota guru jiti
mere anka vicha guru da didara lika de
mere hirde viche gurada pyara lika de
Satguru da vichora ikanaliki mere Satguru da vichora bhave chuta jai sara sansara likade mere hirde che curata piara licade licanavali a tu oche de ala licade mere ire devi che curata
O writer of fortunes, graciously write on my heart love for the Master. Our next bhajan is on page 21. Ramari Sawan. Great are you, my Sawan. Great are you, my giver. You are the support of the miserable ones. You dwell within all, but are different from all. You can make a beggar rule over a kingdom, and you can turn a king into a beggar. You can make an ignorant one into a scholar, and you can turn a scholar into a fool. Sometimes you spread your jolly for alms, and sometimes you become a giver. You can change the water into earth. You can change the earth into a well, and over that well you can create a mountain. You can make the sky cover the earth. You can make the risen sky fall. You yourself become the support of him who has no protector in this world. There is no one without you. You dwell within all, whether he is king or pauper. Your light is within everyone. Your plays are unique. You make your presence felt everywhere. You have liberated demons like Kode and Vali Kandari. You have even liberated sinners like Ganaka the prostitute. Your plays are unique. Sometimes you become a trader and open a shop. Sometimes you do farming. As the sons are dear to the mother, the devotees are dear to you. And being controlled by the devotees, you do everything for them. Ajabe's fortune has awakened. He met you, the beloved Sawan. Great are you, my Sawan. Great are you, my giver. You are the support of the miserable ones. You dwell within all, but are different from all. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 21.
Vameri Sawana Vameritata Dukiyata Saharatu Gata Gata Devicha Vasada Hoya Pirahe Sabato Nyaratu Bhameri Sawana Bhameri Data Dukiyata Sahara Tu Gata Gata Devicha Vasada Hoya Pirahe Sabato Nyara Tu Bhikari te rajakarave, rajate bikari ho. Kalamurakate pandita karpo, pandita te mukhadari ho. Bikari te raja karave, raja te bikari ho. Kalamurakate pandita karpo, pandita te mukhadari ho. Karake joli bikia lenda, karake joli bikia lenda, pandita te tatara tu, gata gata te vichavasada hoya, irene sabato nyada tu. Vāmeri sāvana vāmeri dātta dukkhiyātta sahāratu gata gata devicca vasada hoya pirahe sabato nyāratu Chalate talakar talate kuva, kupate mera garave ho, darati te akasha chardave, charade akasha garave ho. Chalate talakar talate kuva, Upate mera karave ho, darati te akasha chardave, charade akasha karave ho. Jisata jagate koi naraka, jisata jagate koi naraka, Ape bane sahara tu, gata gata devicca vasada hoya, pirahe sabato nyara tu. Vameri sawana vameri data, dukkhiyata sahara tu. Gata gata devicca vasada hoya, pirahe sabato nyara tu. Tere bajo koi nakali, hara ika vicca samana ho. Gata gata devicca jota he teri, Kyara cha kyara na ho. Tere bajo koi nakali, hara ika vicca samana ho. Gata gata te vicca jota he teri, kyara cha kyara na ho. Lila teri ajabaniyari, lila teri ajabaniyari, artha kara ishara tu, gata gata devicca vasada hoya, pirahe sabato nyara tu. Vameri sawana vameri data, dukkhiyata sahara tu, gata gata devicca vasada hoya, pirahe sabato nyara tu.
Kode rakasha varage tare. Tariya vali kandari ho. Papa naganaka tari data. Teri lila niari ho. Kode rakasha varage tare. Tariya vali kandari ho. Papanakanaka tari data teri lila niari ho. Kade betata hata kolake. Kade betata hata kolake. Kare kade chimatara tu. Gata gata de vicha vasata hoya pira he sabato nyara tu. Vamere sawana vamere data dukiya dasa hara tu. Gata gata de vicha vasata hoya. Pira he sabaton yara tu. Mavanu he putarapiare. Tenu bhagata piare ho. Bhagata devasa hoke data. Sare kajasarare ho. Mavanu he puntara piare, tenu bhagata piare ho, bhagata devasa hoke data, sare kajasarare ho. Ajaiva di kisamata jagi, Ajaiva di kisamata jagi, Milia sawampiara tu, Gata gata devicha vasada hoya, Pira he sabato nyara tu. Va mere sawana va mere data, Dukiya dasa hara tu. Gata gata de vicha vasada hoya, Pira he sabato nyara tu.
Great are you, my Sawan. Great are you, my giver. You are the support of the miserable ones. You dwell within all, but are different from all. So your reading, continuing our reading from the Crown of Life, Master Kripal's masterpiece, in my opinion. Last week we finished reading chapter 4 on Advaitism, which Master refers to in the chapter as the philosophy of yoga. That is the concept, the idea of non-dualism. That is that only one exists in reality and everything else only has reality by virtue of their being part of that one. And although the book is divided into two sections, of which chapter 4 is the last chapter of the first section, and chapter 5 is the first chapter of the second section, it has always seemed to me, at least from a long time back, that chapters 4, 5, and 6 constitute a unit of which one leads directly into the other, and of which the first and second chapters and the 7th and 8th chapters are more or less appendixes to the middle three. So this chapter 5 is called Sudrit Shravan Yoga, the Yoga of the Celestial Sound Current. And this, of course, is the actual teaching of the Master himself. But if we bear in mind the philosophical points that Shankara made, that Master quoted in the last chapter, many things in this particular section will become more clear, more obvious perhaps. Anyway, Master says, in the foregoing sections of this study, we have seen how it has been taught since time immemorial by the Indian sages that behind the apparent self of which we are conscious in everyday existence, the self that shirks pain and seeks pleasure, that changes from moment to moment and is subject to the effect of time and space, there is the permanent self, capital S, the Atman. This Atman forms the basic reality, the final substance, the essence of essences, and it is in the light of its being that all else assumes meaning. Likewise, we have seen how the Indian mystics have analyzed the nature of the universe. Seen from the surface, our world appears to be a queer composition of contradictory elements. Faced with these contradictions, man is compelled to look for a creator who holds the opposing forces in balance and represents permanence behind the flux of existence. But as he penetrates deeper and still deeper, he discovers that the contradictions are only apparent, not real, that far from being opposed in nature, they are differentiated manifestations of the same power, and that they are not even manifestations, properly so called, but are illusions of the ignorant mind, which are dispelled in the light of realization when one begins to know that the ocean is changeless, though it appears to change. These two insights are basic to Indian thought, and on closer examination will be seen to be not separate, but one. The recognition of the absolute nature of the inner self, the Atman, implies recognition of the true nature of existence, of the Paramatman, the Brahman, while an understanding of the nature of Paramatman or Brahman implies an understanding of the Atman. If behind the changing, time-ridden self there be an eternal, changeless, and timeless One, and if behind the flux of mutability of the creation as we normally know it, there be an absolute immutable reality, then the two must be related and must in fact be identified. How can there be two absolutes? How can the Atman be distinct from the Brahman when all that is only a projection of Brahman? The moment we realize these truths about the nature of self and over-self, or the one truth about the nature of reality, the problem that inevitably poses itself is, why do we in everyday existence experience the world in terms of duality and plurality, feeling ourselves separate from each other and from life in general? And what may be the means for transcending this unnecessary constriction of ourselves and merging into the ocean of consciousness that is our essential state? The answer to the first part of this question has been that the spirit, in its downward descent, gets enveloped in fold upon fold of mental and material apparatus, which compel it to experience life in terms of their limitations, until, no longer conscious of its own inherent nature, The soul identifies itself with their realm of time and space. Nam Rup Prapanch. The answer to the second part has been that the soul can bear witness to itself, provided it can divest itself of its limiting adjuncts. The many forms and variations of yoga that we have examined are no more than the various methods evolved for accomplishing this process of disentanglement or spiritual involution. The one recurring theme in the teachings of all great rishis and mystics has been that their insights are based not on inherited learning, philosophical speculation, or logical reasoning, but on first-hand inner experience, or anubhava, a word whose lucidity of expressiveness defies translation. They explain that seeming differences are not because of any contradiction inherent in what they say, but because men vary greatly in temperament, and what is possible for the man of a cultured and refined intelligence is impossible for the unsophisticated peasant, and vice versa. Various rivers may wend through different plains, but they all reach the sea. Patanjali's Eightfold Path is the first major attempt to correlate the many available avenues into a single coherent system for spiritual reintegration. Later rishis and teachers derive much guidance from him, but their teachings implicitly embody the recognition that his system is too exacting and tends to deny spiritual attainment to the average man. Furthermore, it is so complex that for the majority of sadhaks, or aspirants, it is likely to become a maze in which they lose their way and mistake the intermediate goals for the final destination. And so, while mantra yoga, laya yoga, hatha yoga, and especially raja yoga carry on Patanjali's tradition in modified forms, there emerge three other major forms that represent, in contrast to the Ashtanga Marg, a great simplification and specialization. The Jnana Yogin, the Karma Yogin, or the Bhakta no longer needs to retire from the world or undergo exacting psychophysical disciplines. Each approaches the goal from a particular angle and reaches it by sheer purposeful concentration. The end of all yoga, as Shankara clarified, is absorption into the Brahman. All the paths therefore aim at samadhi, in which state such experience can be attained. But if Patanjali's system and its derivatives have certain serious drawbacks, it is a question whether the three other major forms are wholly without them. If for the Karma Yogin freedom lies through detachment and desirelessness, is it possible for him to be completely free? Does he not seek emancipation in following his path, and is not that itself a form of desire? Besides, is it psychologically possible for the human mind to detach itself completely from its normal field of experience without first anchoring itself in another and higher one? It is a universal characteristic of man that he seeks kinship with something other than himself. This is the law of his life and the source of all his great achievements. The child is bound to his toys and the adult to family and society. As in the case of a child, you may not without harm deprive him of his playthings until he has outgrown them psychologically. Likewise, to expect the sadhak to give up his social and family attachments without first outgrowing them by discovering something greater and larger is to cut at the root of life. It will not bring progress but regression. For the man who undertakes it as an enforced discipline only succeeds in repressing his natural desires. The result is not the enhancement of consciousness, but its numbing and atrophy, not detachment, but indifference. This, as Mr. T.S. Eliot has pointed out, differed completely from both attachment and detachment, resembling the others as death resembles life, being between two lives, unflowering between the live and the dead nettle. The discipline of karma yoga is a necessary one, but if it is to fulfill its end, it must be completed by another discipline of an esoteric kind, without which it tends to reduce itself to an ineffectual attempt to lift oneself up by one's shoestrings. As for the Gnana Yogin, Gnana may carry him very far indeed. It may take him beyond the gross physical plane into the spiritual ones. But can Gnana carry him beyond itself? And if Gnana, which as we have seen, forms one of the koshas that encompass the Atman, albeit a very rarefied one, how can it then give the soul absolute freedom? Gnana is the help, and yet it may prove to be the hindrance. Of course, Gnana is the word in modern Hindi pronounced gyan, which is cognate to the Greek gnosis and the English knowledge, and it refers to the yoga of correct understanding, of having the right knowledge to understand what is what. It's basically the idea of Advaitism working itself out in a spiritual discipline. Gnana has indubitably the power to rid the soul of all encumbrances grosser than itself, but having reached thus far, it tends to clog further progress. And since it is not of the true essence of the soul, the absolute, it cannot be wholly above the reach of kal or time. Mystics distinguish between the two realms of time, kal and mahakal, thus. The first of these extends over the physical world and the less gross regions immediately above it, whereas the second stretches to all the higher planes that are not of pure spirit. Hence, the gains that the Gnani achieves may be out of the reach of time as we normally conceive it, kal, but they are not wholly beyond the reach of greater time, mahakal. It need hardly be pointed out that what is true of Gnana Yoga is also true of those forms of yoga that depend upon the pranic energies. They too are not of the true nature of the Atman, and as such cannot lead it to a state of absolute purity beyond the realm of relativity. Besides its inability to ensure absolute freedom, Gnana Yoga is not a path accessible to the average man. It demands extraordinary intellectual powers and stamina, which few possess. It was to meet this difficulty, as well as that posed by Karma Yoga when practiced by itself, that Bhakti Yoga came into prominence. He who normally would not be able to detach himself from the world, nor had the mental powers to analyze the true self from the untrue, could, by the power of love, leap or bridge the gap and reach the goal. But how can man love that which has neither form nor shape? So the Bhakta anchors himself in the love of some Ishit-deva, some definite manifestation of God. But in overcoming this practical difficulty, he exposes himself to the same limitations as the Gnani. The chosen Ishit-deva, by its very nature, represents a limitation upon the nameless and formless absolute. And even if the Bhakta reaches the level of that manifestation, can that limited being take him beyond itself to that which has no limitation? A study of the lives of the prominent exponents of this system clarifies the point. Ramanuja, the well-known mystic of the Middle Ages, failed to apprehend the teachings of his predecessor Shankara. He followed what in Indian philosophy is known as the school of Vashishtadvaita, that is, that the Atman can reach Ishvara, God as the manifested creator of the universe, and can get saturated with cosmic consciousness, but it can never become one with him. What to say, then, of reaching God as the unmanifested, nameless Brahman? The experience of Sri Ramakrishna in our own time once again brings out this limitation. He had always been a worshipper of the Divine Mother, and she often blessed him with her visions. But he always perceived her as something other than himself, as a power outside himself and one for whose operation he could often become a medium, but in which he could not merge himself. When he subsequently met Todapuri, an Advaita sannyasin, he realized that he must get beyond this stage to one where there was no name or form, and where the self and the over-self became one. When he attempted to enter into such a state, he discovered that his earlier attainments became a hurdle in spite of all his efforts. He tells us, and this is a long quote from Ramakrishna, "I could not cross the realm of name and form and bring my mind to the unconditioned state. I had no difficulty in withdrawing my mind from all objects except one, and this was the all-too-familiar form of the Blissful Mother, radiant and of the essence of pure consciousness, which appeared before me as a living reality and would not allow me to pass the realm of name and form. Again and again I tried to concentrate my mind upon the Advaita teachings, but every time the Mother's form stood in the way. In despair, I said to the Naked One, his master Todapuri, 'It is hopeless. I cannot raise my mind to the unconditioned state and come face to face with the Atman.' He grew excited and sharply said, 'What? You can't do it, but you have to.' He cast his eyes around for something, and finding a piece of glass, he took it up and, pressing its point between my eyebrows, said, 'Concentrate your mind on this point.' Then, with stern determination, I again sat to meditate, and as soon as the gracious form of the Divine Mother appeared before me, I used my discrimination as a sword, and with it severed it into two. There remained no more obstruction to my mind, which at once soared beyond the relative plane, and I lost myself in samadhi." Unquote. It is clear, therefore, that while the bhakta can go very far spiritually, can greatly enhance his consciousness, gain miraculous powers, and anchored in a higher love, rise above the love of this world, it is nevertheless not possible for him to get beyond the plane of name and form, and therefore of relativity. He may get lost in the contemplation of the Godhead with his amazing attributes, but he cannot experience the same in its nirguna and its anami, its unconditioned and nameless states. He can feel himself saturated with cosmic consciousness, but it comes to him as something outside himself as a gift of grace, and he is not able to lose himself in it and become one with the ocean of being. If he does seek to attain that state, his accomplishment as a bhakta, instead of helping him further, tend to hinder and obstruct him. The two things that emerge from an examination of the popular forms of yoga that were evolved after Patanjali are, first, that the soul can rise above physical consciousness, given means whereby it can focus its energies without recourse to the arduous control of pranas, and second, that full spiritual realization or true samadhi is not merely a matter of transcending the physical, though that is necessary as a first step, but is the end of a complex inner journey in which there are many intermediate stages, the attainment of which, under certain conditions, may be mistaken for the final goal and may thus debar further progress. The problem that arises before the true seeker in the face of such a situation is to discover a means other than that of pranas, ganana, or bhakti of an Ishideva, as not only to enable the spirit currents to be released from their present physical bondage, but also to enable the soul to be drawn upward unhindered from one spiritual plane to another, until it transcends completely all the realms of relativity, of nam and rup, of kala and mahakal, and reaches its goal, at one-ment with the nameless and formless one. And Master's point about the way to do that is manifested in the idea of the sound current, which he explains in the section we will read next time. It does seem to me, and I have pondered this particular section over the years many, 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 many times, going back to the very early 60s when I first came across this book and began to read it, that, of course, all of the things that Master describes as problems with the practice of Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Karma Yoga can apply equally well to the path if we approach the path in those ways. And that the point about the sound current is that it is the only thing available in the lower worlds that is of the same essence as the Absolute. And the point about the Master in this context is that it is that in the physical world which is the embodiment of the sound current. It is to say the outer manifestation of that which is otherwise inner, and therefore enables us, is able to enable us, to grasp that which is within ourselves and is of our essence of our essences. The ease with which that which is intermediate is mistaken for that which is final is also a problem, can be a problem, in the practice of the path too. And this is why when Master gave his great talk, The Gift of the Living Master, which is part of which is recorded in a movie and the whole of which is printed in the book The Coming Spiritual Revolution, he raised such an insistence on the idea that yes, the Master is everything, but the real Master is the Shabad. The outer Master is still an intermediate goal pointing to that real Master, the Shabad, which is within us. And that is what we have to connect with, become one with, and that is what the Master is leading us to. The Master himself in the outer world is a pointer to that which is the essence of our essences. And this is the overriding point of the crown of life. And one other point which Master makes plainer as we go along, and he's already said, is of course that ultimately speaking, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, and Karma Yoga represent three aspects of the path. That is to say, it's like three psychological components of the path of the Masters are separated out and take on a life of their own. But the successful practice of the Master's path requires mastery of all three of those yogas. And that he makes plain as we go along. I want to finish the chapter on the blessed are the pure in heart from the Stranger of Galilee. This is almost all quotes from morning talks and from his talk, What is True Living? Both talks of Kripal. We left off last week where Master, in morning talk number 40, Master describes the condition of the lover of God. Who is the lover? The lover becomes the beloved, and the beloved becomes the lover. All differences of mind, body, and soul are swept out of the door. This is, in a few words, who is the guru and who is the Sikh. Sikh, of course, means disciple. So try to be wholly and solely a follower. I think you will then have what you are after without asking for it. So this is the subject referred to today. We should be awake from within to God or to the God in man, and asleep from outside. That will come only, will result only, when your whole attention is absorbed in Him. The outward expression of the soul is attention, and we are attention, is it not so? With one attention of God, the whole creation came into being. God said, I am one and wish to become many, and lo, the world was formed. If we withdraw from the outside world and become absorbed in Him, we are micro-gods. These things are not given so vividly in the books because it is a practical question. So try to be a true follower wholly and solely in mind, body, and soul. You will become masters. You will see one day that you are not what you were before. Even now, if you will take a cursory view of the past, you will see that you are better than you were before. Now you are not what you want to become 100%, but you are 10%, 20%, 50%, but improving. So go on to be a true follower of the Master, so much so that you absorb yourself into Him. Then you won't know who is in you, whether it is you or he or you. You will have become, it is I, not now I, but Christ lives in me. This is the ultimate goal of love, and you are just to see where you stand. It is a great good fortune to have a living Master, a true Master. There are many Masters, 101, 1001, yet they are all only acting in posing or on the way. Anybody who follows them is led away. Furthermore, they do not derive the full benefit of coming to a true Master. So that is why I say, if you love the Master, you must keep His commandments. The ABC starts from this. If you become like Him, He is always with you, talking to you, going around you. Kabir says, I am now so pure at heart that God is after me, calling my name. O Kabir, O Kabir. Kabir is going forward and God is following him. God is seeking somebody who is awake to Him and asleep outside. That's all. And my comment is, it is clear that many ways of understanding the Beatitudes come together with this concept. Of course, the Beatitudes are the first few verses of the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit, etc. And we are specifically considering the one, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. The two parts of the saying, blessed are the pure in heart, and because they shall see God, are important because not only does the adage imply that it is possible to become pure in heart, but also it is possible to see God. This belief is well known in esoteric teaching. In the esoteric Jewish tradition out of which Jesus came, and in all forms of mysticism, seeing God is the goal. Being awake, as Master explained, is another way of saying the same thing. The way to become pure in heart is through the use of Simran, the process of remembrance. Why? When we substitute the overriding, inclusive, sweet remembrance of God for the distracting, lesser, everyday thoughts that fragment us, we take a long step toward becoming one with Him. In Master Kripal's talk, What is True Living?, given in Los Angeles in 1963 and published in The Coming Spiritual Revolution, he explores these ideas in an interesting way. And this is a quote from that talk. If your hearts are pure, you will feel that little things will affect you. For that reason, because it is the temple of God, we have to keep the body clean, and also keep it clean from within, by giving it food that does not go to defile it, and by living a way which is pure. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Tulsi tells us, just cleanse your heart, your mind. And what is the cleansing of the mind? Let no other thought other than that of God strike there. Even if you are living in the world, amongst your children, your families, your friends, the needle of your compass should be towards God. It is God who has given. It is God residing in them. If you always think, all men are alike, they have the same privileges from God and are born the same way, they are the same embodied souls, and the very same God power is controlling them in the body, their bodies are the true temples of God, then naturally you will have respect for all. So this is the purity required for being able to progress from day to day. And then, left out of the quote in this book, but as part of the talk, Master told a story about Guru Nanak falling asleep and being shaded by a cobra who hovered over him with his hood stretched out and protected him from the sun. And people were astonished to see that. They thought the cobra was threatening him, of course. And Master says, we had a similar event in our satsang meetings at Delhi. About 2,000 people were sitting there. And while I was giving a talk, one cobra, a little cobra, came out and stood on the stage just like that, Master demonstrated with his hand, in front of me. And the people said, a cobra is coming. I said, never mind, go on with it. Let him come and stand here. And he, that cobra, stood for one full hour, hearing the talk that was going on, looking at me. When the talk was over, he sneaked away, and the people said, let us kill him. Why? He has not done anything. Why kill him? So this all is meant to say, if you have love for all, even snakes won't harm you. We have got a proverb. Be wise like snakes. Snakes are very wise, mind that. When you see a snake and think, oh, kill him, the very thought goes out and he safeguards himself by attacking. If you have no evil thoughts for anybody, they won't do any harm to you. So I'm telling you, thoughts are more potent. Now you will find that an ounce of practice is worth more than tons of theories. Of what use is it to know the principles if one does not live up to them? If you say, tell the truth, and you don't tell the truth, if you say, love others, don't think evil of others, and you still think evil of others, what is the use of knowing that? That's holding information in your brain. Such and such scriptures say such and such. Such and such masters say such and such. Well, what is that to you? We should learn to live up to them. A learned man with no practice is no better than a beast of burden carrying a load of books, of scriptures, that's all. So it is infinitely better to practice than to preach. First live, then say. Otherwise, even though you may be a scholar and you may have written commentaries on certain subjects which sound outwardly very religious, even though you read scriptures and preach them to others, if you do not live up to them, then what is the sense of that? Truly, such like preaching does not carry any effect. Only the arrow that is drawn to the chest goes to the target. The words that come out of our heart as we live up to them carry effect by radiation to others' hearts. Mind that if you don't live up to what you say, those words won't carry any effect. I think there is so much preaching going on nowadays. Perhaps in the olden days nobody even dreamt of it. And with all that, how many lovers are coming up? How many saints are there? With all our preaching, our lives have not changed. What is the reason why? The preachers are themselves not living up to what they say. Mind that any wind that strikes a burning fire and passes by it, those men who are sitting on the other side of it will have hot winds. And if there is some ice, mounds of ice, tons of ice, heaps of ice, and if any wind passes by it, the man who is sitting on the other side will have cold wind. So whatever thoughts are in our hearts, and any words we give out, come charged with those very things that are already there. If a man openly is very good, I am a very good man, and his heart is full of passions, and he is not living up to what the scriptures say, naturally whatever words he utters, even though they may be very sweet words, will carry the effect of heat. And if there is a heap of ice and you put a black blanket over it, which does not appear to be very cold, even then, anyone who strikes that heap of ice, apparently covered by a black blanket, will receive cold. Do you follow my point? This is what is required. A spoon passing through a sweet dish does not have any taste of it. This is just the way it is with persons who have so much knowledge at the intellectual level, but don't live up to it. As I told you, an ounce of practice is worth more than tons of theories. This is one thing. And above all, I would say, as I told you before, a pure heart is most essential for spiritual progress. You cannot expect a king to enter a filthy cabin. Even a dog doesn't sit in an unclean place. He cleans the place with his tail. How can you expect God to appear in a heart full of passions, greed, pride, attachment, or egoism? So what is a saint? He is a man like you, but he is developed in that way. A little word of his carries more effect than hundreds of lectures given by others. Our closing bhajan is on page 256. Guru, 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 Guru. Say Guru, Guru with love. You have got the human body with a great good fortune. Take advantage of this. Meditate on the Nam as much as you can. However much you have slept thus far is enough. At least now open your eyes. Say Guru, Guru with love. Whoever has moved the rosary of the Nam of the Master with true heart, all his illusions and secrets were erased because such a light was manifest within. Drink the nectar of the Nam of the Guru. Make your life interesting. Say Guru, Guru with love. The holy Nam of the Master removes the heat of passions, curses and anxieties. The Satguru is hungry for the love and affection of the devotees, as was Krishna or Rama. The moments which are spent in the Simran are precious. Say Guru, Guru with love. Whenever the devotees remembered him, he came running barefoot. He always embraces the poor ones, and he always gives support to the weak ones. O Kripalji, give me the alms of Nam. This is the request of Ajay. Say Guru, Guru with love. Guru, 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 Guru. Say Guru, Guru with love. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 256.
Guru, 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 Bole Prema Se, Guru, 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 Bole Prema Se, Guru, Guru. Badi bagi mahana satana paya Isa kalaba utale Jitana nama diya sakata hai Utana nama diya le Badi bagi mahana satana paya Isa kalaba utale Jitana nama diya sakata hai Utana nama diya le Jitana soya vahi bahut hai Ab to aham ke kol prem se guru guru Guru, 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 bole prema se, guru, 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 bole prema se, guru, guru. Jisne feri hi sahache man se Guru naam ki mala Jitne ved paramte mit gaye Aisa hua ujala Jisne feri hi sahache man se Guru naam ki mala Jitne ped paramte mit gaye Aisa hua ujala Guru naam ka amrit pile Jivan mein ras gola prem se Guru, Guru Guru, 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 Guru Bole prem se Guru, Guru Guru, 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 Bole prema se, Guru, Guru. Tapa, shapa, sahanta, hapa, mitata, Guru kapavana nama. Prema bhava ke buke satguru Krishan ka hoya rama Tapa shapa sahanta pamitata Guru ka pavana nama Prema bhava ke buke satguru Krishan ka hoya rama Jo pal simran me pite Ve pal hai anmol prem se guru guru Guru, 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 Bole prema se, Guru, 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 Bole prema se, Guru, Guru. Yad ki yad jab bhi bhagatone Nange pero doda aya sada dina ko gale la gaya sada dia dura bala ko sahara Nya kia jaba biba gatone Nange pero doda aya Sada dina ko gale la gaya Sada dia dura bala ko sahara Kere nam ki pavo ki palaji Ajaibarabo la prema se guru 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 Bo la prema se guru guru Guru, 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 bona prema se, guru, guru.
Guru, 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 say guru, guru with love. May God continue to bless us all.